Hi friends, happy March. Spring is on its way. I cannot wait. I'm so sorry, not sorry, to all my seasonal allergy girlies out there, but I'm selfish. And I have to say that. Just let all the flowers bloom and pollens fly in the breeze. I'm so sorry, but I'm so sick of winter. Like literally, I am sick. You can hear in my voice. And I cannot wait for better climates and temperatures here in New York City. Thinking about the flowers of spring and summer and not the dirty white, yellow, and brown snow of winter and the 20 degree Fahrenheit weather is literally making me feel good. My feel-good hormones are all coming out, and this is the topic of our episode today. Feel-good hormones, good mindset, happy brain, yes. This is what we always want to hear, right? Just serotonin and dopamine rush from our brain to our bloodstream, and we walk on cloud nine and all, but honestly, this is not the truth when it comes to the brain. The brain, as you may know, is so complex. There's something new every day. New research findings are always in the tabloids. New medicine always coming out of evolution. And I wish it was always happy results and news, but definitely this is not the case. As the brain and the mind are complex, so do small functions that occur within it. We usually say that the CPU of the computer is its brain. So many wirings and electricity and functions, and this is exactly how our brain looks like. Electricity, wirings, firings. And as all things, sometimes something goes wrong. Sometimes it's more tangible in mass, like a cancerous tumor or even a blood clot that leads to a stroke. Sometimes it's more thermal, like seizures and epilepsy. Sometimes it's more chemical, like in unseen psychiatric disorders. Sometimes it's more electrical and technical and damage, like paralysis and speech disorders and movement disorders. And sometimes it's just a mix of all things, like complex things like neurofibrillary tangles and amyloid plaques, as in Alzheimer's disease and dementia. I first witnessed Alzheimer's disease and dementia through a movie. Do you remember the film The Notebook from the novel by Nicholas Sparks? I mean, who hasn't watched it? But this one hell of a journey of a love story, the end scene where Noah visits Allie, who is now suffering from dementia, disoriented, loss of memory, unrecognizing her greatest love. Truly, diseases of the brain is like a storm, thunder and lightning. How do you weather through it? How do you stay adrift above the waves, and how do you glide over the vehement winds? Can we avoid these progressive conditions? Can one evade memory loss? Can feel-good hormones just trump over the bad ones? Can brain cancer be eradicated? Can set ultimatums be extended, or even better, turn back like we're starting an hourglass? Today, in this episode, we are joined by a good friend of mine, Jun Myung, a neuro-oncology nurse practitioner with over 17 years of experience as an NP, who is an advocate for brain and mental health, and educator for Alzheimer's disease and dementia. I bring her on to tell her stories within this torrential field of the brain and its patients, not only as a provider, but also as a loved one, being a daughter whose mom had dementia. Truly, the mind is a devil's playground, and the brain can truly storm. But can the same brain and the same mind take us from that downpour and bring upon the sunlight and rainbows? This episode is such a special and heartfelt one. Forget the medicine and the scientific logistics. Just listen to the humanity of the conversations that occur in this discussion. I hope you get something out of this episode, and I'm sure you will. Thank you for tuning in. Let me rest my voice.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so happy that we're finally here.
I know. I'm so excited.
I know, me too. I've been waiting so patiently and for so long for our session today because I'm just so excited for our conversation tonight, which is going to be a super, super important and very informative discussion. You know, May is a month of many awareness days, right?
It is.
It's mental health. Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. It's also Brain Cancer Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. And couldn't think of anyone more perfect to join you tonight than you to speak about all these special and super, super pertinent topics. If you could just first please introduce yourself to everyone. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. First of all, I'm so excited to finally meet you officially. We've been talking for so long, and I'm just so honored that you would think of me. I'm no expert, but I'm an advocate, and I'm passionate about these topics, so I'm really excited. So my name is June Young. I am a board-certified nurse practitioner. I'm currently working in Southern California in the Department of Neuro-Oncology. I've been doing this for about almost 6 years now. And it's just kind of interesting how I fell into this specialty that I will kind of, you know, talk about a little bit later. But I've been a nurse practitioner for the past, wow, I'm going to be aging myself, about 16, no, 17 plus years now. So
an expert.
I did the family nurse practitioner track at UCLA. I graduated 2005. So maybe for like about 12 years, I worked primarily in primary care, urgent care. You know, honestly, I just needed some flexibility because, you know, during the whole time I was either pregnant, having kids and doing all that. So, you know, the urgent care is just like a great place where you can, you know, still work, have great experience, but, you know, there's more flexibility there. And I think after my third child, he was about three, I felt like, okay, now I can like specialize and do something, you know, delve a little bit more deeper into something. I don't want to say more interesting because, you know, primary care and urgent care definitely is its own, you know, it's great. I love health promotion. I love teaching and I like all the aspects of all of that. But I just felt like I did it for so long and I just wanted to do something different. So why neuro-oncology? Honestly, I don't know. I just started like applying like all these different specialties and then, you know, did all these interviews and that one kind of just like, yeah, that's the one that stuck. But I just have a little fun factoid for you. Guess which two subjects were my least favorite in school? I'm going to give you a guess.
Is it neuro and oncology?
I'm not even kidding. I remember thinking like, ugh, like neuro. It's just so hard to wrap your brain around, literally. It's just so intense, right? It's like you could do like a whole like year on neurology. Yeah. And oncology, I was like, oh no, I'm not going to touch that, you know? You know, at UCLA, they had like an oncology track and one of my friends was in it. And I was like, you know, you do it. You know, it's like do all that chemo and everything. Like it's just, but you know, like life just kind of takes you places. And yeah, so that's kind of my little
story. Yeah, I love it. I mean, I must say, I agree with the whole neuro part. I think if there's one like block or subject during nursing school or whenever I'm trying to learn something, right? Like let's say in biology, neuro is always the system where I'm like, I have no idea how I'm going to remember or understand any of this. There's just so many things going on at the same time. It's not just the brain, right? It's like also the spinal cord and all of the deep matters of the brain. And you gotta like know which part does this, which part does... and then all of the cranial nerves as well. Yeah. I agree with the whole but I love how you're like in neuro-oncology and your least favorite are neuro and oncology.
I just sometimes like laugh. I'm just like, how in the world did I end up here? But it's just been such a like an amazing journey, you know? I think it was a fear like of doing something that I didn't know that I could like perfect, you know? Mm-hmm. After being a nurse practitioner for about like what, 12 years, like to go into like a specialty and not really be an expert and like be new where I'm kind of like older, it was really kind of scary. But I think this just kind of proved to me that like, you know, you have to do what scares you because that's kind of where you're supposed to be. And like every time I like shy away from something that I'm afraid of, I regret it later because I feel like I was supposed to do that.
Yeah.
And so why I applied, I just didn't assume they would hire me because I don't have any like neuro or like, you know, acute like neuro ICU or anything like that. They said that they hired me because I have such a strong medical background. And I didn't understand that until like I delved into neuro-oncology and I realized how much I needed that, you know, to treat my patients. Because, you know, when they have cancer and are having chemotherapy, there's so many other, you know, things that happen that we have to manage. So they wanted that part of my experience. And, you know, it's been kind of a whirlwind the last like 6 years. Like I would say like the first 2 years of it, you know, as nurse practitioner, we're not like in med school, but I was literally like in my backpack, had like big books I was like up all night. My husband was like, I feel like you're next door. I was like, I feel like it too. It's just such an intense, like, there's just no way that I could have prepared for it without just learning as I go, you know? And I really appreciated my colleagues who just kind of guided me because, you know, I'm not the physician. I'm a nurse practitioner, so I have a different role. But just learning all about the different cancers, the brain cancers, and like the different types of treatment, you know, like the complications that arises from all of that, you know, it was a really big learning curve. The first year, I felt like an imposter.
I can imagine. Yeah. I mean, like, neuro in itself is like so complex, right? I mean, even our previous guests who are neuro, like surgeons or like specialized neurologists, even they say, like, yeah, we can't even call ourselves like an expert in this expertise because there's just something new every day, I guess, about the brain. I mean, you know, when we hear on like the cellular level, right? Like our neurons, it's like just like spark things, just fire things. You just never know what's happening, right?
There's so much more.
Learn something new every day. So I can't imagine how big of a learning curve that is. Well, I guess take our audience into that June who was there for the very first time. It was like having this learning curve too. For those who may not know, for the general public, I guess people are aware of what neuro is and they're aware of what oncology is, like in separate entities. But in the life of neuro-oncology, what are we really talking about? Like, what are the things that you see in neuro-oncology? And let's say, oh, I'm going to work today. I'm a neuro-oncology NP. For sure, like, top three, these are the top reasons why my patients come to see me.
Okay, so it's pretty super specialized. You know, you had the oncology doctor previously, and you know, that's such a huge field. But our specialty is extremely, like, you know, it's a niche. But, you know, surprisingly, we do have a wide set of diagnoses. But I would say, like, the top three diagnoses that we see, the, you know, glioblastoma, it's the most common primary malignant brain tumor, maybe meningiomas, and like brain metastasis. We see patients who, you know, have primary cancers somewhere else, and then it metastasizes to the brain. And then we have to get involved in terms of, like, you know, how we proceed with treatment. But I would break up my day, like, maybe like in two parts, because I do inpatient and outpatient. So inpatient, because I work at a teaching hospital, we see a lot. We don't actually, like, admit patients, but, like, you know, in the emergency room, if someone presents with, they suspect a tumor, they do a CT scan, they find something, they consult us. So then, you know, I'll go across. Our outpatient clinic is on the same campus, so I'll walk over to the inpatient, consult like the new person, and then we kind of like help them. You know, we're basically like a team with neurosurgery, like neuro, like medicine. We work together and kind of get this person, if it's like something that needs to be treated like right away, neurosurgery will, you know, jump in and do surgery, and then we'll say, you know, we'll see you after you recover. Our outpatient clinic, you know, when I round, it's more of just like a history and doing like a complete like neuro exam to see where their deficits are before and after surgery, just to see how they, you know, how we can help them recover. And then outpatient wise, which is kind of like, you know, the bulk of what I do, you know, it's like an 8 to 5 Monday through Friday clinic. We have a couple neuro-oncologists, and there's me and another NP, and we have a neuro-oncology fellow, and we have a really amazing team of nurses and medical students. They're like case managers. But my role is pre-chemo patients who have already established like their treatment plan with the attending. A lot of times, if it's a new consult, like from another hospital, or like we didn't end up seeing them in the hospital, they'll come see us outpatient as like the first time meeting us. Then I'll just do like the whole, you know, history and physical and get all the information and do their exam and whatnot. And I'll see them in tandem with the attending physician. So basically, once the treatment plan is in place, then whatever it may be, like if it's an oral chemo, intrathecal chemo, and I'll kind of talk about that a little more, but or if it's like an infusion, which we'll get like in the infusion center, then they'll see me like for the subsequent visits, for like pre-chemo visits, just, you know, to see how they're doing on the chemo, review their labs, if there's any issues, like any side effects they're having, and just kind of like guiding them through the process. Because, you know, this is a pretty, it's a hard diagnosis. I mean, all cancers are difficult, but in this case, a lot of our patients are terminal. Unfortunately, glioblastoma, you know, there's no cure. Like over the past like 60 years, there's no cure. And there's definitely lots of research. I do a lot of clinical trials at our facility as well. So that's really cool to be a part of that.
Yeah.
But it's still like, you know, it's basically we don't know. I do a lot of like counseling. I don't have any professional like training, but it's just like on the job training that I just try to help guide my patients and also their family members, because, you know, and it just goes so fast. Like once they're diagnosed, then there's surgery and there's like chemo and radiation and like labs, MRI. It's like just, it's constant. And throughout the whole process, I feel like they're in shock still, you know, and then I think they're just like, it's just so much information that I feel really bad for them that, you know, it's kind of like a really short, intense time where they just have to like just accept it and just go. You know, we don't have time to just like let them sit with it because it has to be kind of quick.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, I think it's with all cancers, right? Beyond like just the physical toll on the patient, right? Just the whole emotional aspect involved, right? I guess when it comes to cancer, I think a common question that either the patients or their family members always ask is like, why, right? Like, why does it happen to me or to my loved ones, right? Is it your experience with all of these patients who have, whether it's glioblastomas or laryngiomas or even just like metastatic cancers to the brain, what have you seen to be a commonality in their histories as to why many of these cancers arise? Like, are there common risk factors that you see in these patients?
You know, I get asked that question a lot, and I actually asked that question to the director when I first started. I was like, so what is it? Is it genetics? Like, is it the water? Like, is it the food? Like, what is it? You know, is it like the phones? Like, microwave? I don't know. Like, you just like want to like, you want the answer and you want to be able to tell people so that you can prevent this. Fortunately, like most of them, they don't know, you know, like for glioblastoma, they really don't know how it just kind of like from, you know, from the glial cells in the brain, how it just kind of starts. I mean, it's more common in men. And it's more common in older people. I think it's just a combination of just bad luck and like environmental things. And maybe just, I don't know, I can't really say, you know, I can't give the answer, which I wish I could, because then I would just, you know, be yelling it from the mountaintop. But, you know, meningiomas though, they have like a previous history of like a childhood cancer and receive radiation. Then that is a risk for meningiomas. Metastatic cancer, that's just something that, you know, there's really nothing. But for brain cancer-wise, like neuro-onc issues, like there's really nothing, you know, we can tell people like how to avoid, you know. I think just in general, like avoiding toxins, like forever chemicals, just overall, like generally, you know, eating better and whatnot, like I think definitely like, you know, that comes into play. But, you know, like sometimes like when I read articles how like there's like that one like city like in the middle of the United States where like there's like 100 people diagnosed with like glioblastoma, then I'm like, what's going on? You know, there's got to be some kind of chemical that has leached into their system and is causing these like mutations in the cells. So I think, you know, there are certain risk factors, but we just can't like hammer say it's like, oh, it's 1, 2, 3 and just avoid it and you'll be fine.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, even our previous episode with Dr. Sanjay, who's the oncologist, very funny and, you know, very intriguing to hear that he said the same thing as you. It's just bad luck. Like, it's literally just a combination of just things that just go wrong and go haywire, right?
Yeah.
And I guess in those situations, it's really so hard not to question why, right? Why does this happen? And I think secondary to why is like, how do we get through this, right? You know, I think brain and spinal cord cancers have gotten this reputation of, like you said, it's like the scarier forms of cancer, right? Like when people, especially when I watch movies, when someone says, oh, you have brain cancer, my mind is like, oh, that's it.
Yeah, you know, done.
Like you said, it's terminal, right? But with our current science and medicine, what is the deal with neuro-onc conditions and cancers? Is it a treatment basis? Is it, we're just trying to improve the quality of life? Is there even this small or probability of hope that, you know, we can actually go into remission?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think that's actually, I wish more people would ask that because, for example, like I said, like if you have like a, you know, grade 1 meningioma, neurosurgeons will actually tell their patients, oh, it's not cancer. You know, but neuro-oncologists will be like, you know, if there's something in the brain, like it's a tumor, I never use the word benign because I think that people kind of like hinge upon that because, you know, grade one can still come back. It's slower and it's unlikely, but I've actually seen grade one meningiomas like come back with a vengeance as well. I mean, after surgical resection, some of the more, I guess, you know, benign cancers, like just tumors that we like schwannomas and pituitary adenomas, like these are not like terminal, you know, we kind of watch these patients over. We do like serial imaging, you know, whether it's every 2 months, every 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, and we kind of just, and some people just kind of do well. But in terms of talking about like the terminal malignant brain tumors, like glioblastoma, that's kind of like, you know, our heaviest population, you know, without treatment, you know, studies have shown it's about like a 6 month overall survival rate. Which is pretty, it's pretty fast. So with surgery and with treatment, you know, we can hopefully extend that to between like 18 to 24 months, depending on like the genetic mutations and markers that we find in the tumor. Some respond better to treatment, but sometimes it's quick and some people just don't do well. And I think like initially when they come and see us, we do tell them that it's malignant and it's incurable. So we let them know upfront, like, cause you know, they're going to Google it as soon as they can, right? It's going to just tell them all this terrible things. And so we don't sugarcoat it because they have to know it's their body, you know, they have to know how to like deal with it and like with their financial situation and their family situation. But I know our neuro-oncologists don't like to hammer in like a date. Because like I said, then, you know, patients tend to just like cling on to that number, you know, say like, oh, you promised me 24 months. And sometimes it's less. We just kind of like leave it open-ended because we do have these rare, rare cases where, you know, some of our patients have lived like longer. I feel like our physicians have a really hard job in kind of giving that balance of hope, but yet reality so that they don't live the last few like weeks or days just like wasting away in a hospital. And so that's actually one of the biggest struggles that I've had as a nurse practitioner working in this field. I feel like I'm kind of like, it was between me and the social worker. We had many conversations where like, I see the doctors because they're so focused on like treating patients. They will give them every option. Oh, we have this new clinical trial. We have this new medication. And it's, you know, their heart is in the right place because they're healers. They want to give them hope. They want to help because that's why they're in this field. And that's why the physicians that I work with currently, they're so good and I love them. And they're like the best human beings. They're super humble. They're super smart, passionate, and they're kind. And I feel like as a neuro-oncologist, you have to have those qualities. But sometimes like when I kind of start seeing like, oh, my patient is sleeping for 20 hours a day, you know, they don't want to eat, like they're not responding. Like, you know, like you kind of start to like, you know, being in this field for 6 years, I kind of start seeing the end, which is, is really hard. And it's really hard to kind of tell the family, but I think the patient kind of knows, but sometimes like we give them like a different option. And then, you know, I've seen some patients, like when I feel like maybe the last 3 months, they should have just been like on hospice or just, you know, quality versus quantity. I think it's hard to like find that perfect balance. And I feel like that's the struggle that I feel like I'm trying to like, you know, trying to learn better on how to like get our people to have like an optimal treatment time. Like we want to give them this quality 18, 24 months, you know. And I just hope people who are watching aren't just thinking, oh, you know, that's the time frame. It just, you know, could be longer, like I said, could be less. I focus on trying to give them the quality, you know, and I do have these conversations with them here and there. When I start to see that their quality is not there. And like they want to travel, they want to like see family. And I tell them, you know what, you can take a little break, like go do that, because honestly, like, don't know when the next time you'll have that chance. But it's tough, Christian. Like, hard. It's hard for me.
Ever since I was a child, my inner arms and neck would always suffer from itchiness and irritation whenever I would sweat. It can become so debilitating, forcing myself not to scratch my skin and end up with wounds from prickly heat, especially at night. Thankfully,
I have found relief through By Dr. Mom's Soothing Beta Cream and Soothing Bed Treatment, which uses barley-derived beta-glucan technology to help alleviate eczema, bug bites, and dry, itchy, irritated skin. Beta-glucan is a fiber shown in scientific studies to improve skin hydration and healing, and By Dr. Mom's products extract it with a technique that uses air technology, requiring no chemicals or solvents. Created by family physician Dr. Stephanie Liu with the help of an allergist and immunologist, you can now allow your skin to breathe and heal naturally. Using the code CHRISTIAN10, that's CHRISTIAN10, you can get 10% off your first order on bydrmom.com. As a healthcare worker, my identity can become so boxed within the pressures and expectations of my profession that sometimes I forget who I really am outside the hospital walls. This is why I find so much power and liberation in self-expression through fashion and accessories, and Lupin seeks to do the same. Encouraging self-confidence and creating a safe space to be yourself, Lupin seeks to share with the world simple and impactful jewelry pieces that can bring confidence effortlessly. Meaning what goes around comes around, the brand, comprised of third-generation jewelers, holds a mission to brighten the community by promoting positivity and a growth mindset. Lupin's clean designs are handcrafted in South Korea using 925 sterling silver, and can go with almost any outfit on anyone. In fact, I wear my pieces on and off shift. With the code FRANZ, that's FRANZ, you can get 15% off your first order on lupin.com. Let's bring more luster into the world, together with Lupin. I remember coming home every day from elementary school and smelling the newly steamed jasmine rice in the cooker that my grandmother made just in time for dinner. It reminded me of my first few years living on the farm back home in Asia, sniffing the rice while overlooking the fields. Founded in 2020, Bison Candle Co. hand-pours nostalgic and iconic scented soy wax candles inspired by the Asian scents, flavors, and traditions that founder Brandon Leung grew up with in his first-generation Chinese-American household. Brandon's mission with Bison is to create authentic Asian aromas while rediscovering his love of his Chinese culture and heritage. The candles and home fragrances celebrate aromatic Eastern flavors and aromas one would typically find in an Asian kitchen or pantry, like Vietnamese coffee, steamed white rice, and white peach. Enjoy traditional scents alongside some modern spin-off blends and be taken back into the beauty of the motherland with the code BAISUNFRANZ, that's BAISUNFRANZ, for 15% off your first order at BAISUNCANDLECO.com. I feel like in this matter, we always think of, again, the emotional and the psychosocial toll on the patients and the loved ones, right? But it also takes a toll on the healthcare providers who are part of the care team who are taking care of these patients, right? Especially when I always say you don't want a patient to just exist, right? You want them to actually like, live, be alive, even if that means like, you know, just a piece of quality of life, right? I think especially for brain cancers, right, or brain tumors. For example, if it's a lung cancer or if it's a lung tumor, it's like a very localized set of, I guess, presentations and the feelings that the patients feel. But when it comes to the brain, because the brain is so interconnected, it's like, oh, you have a tumor here. That means there'll also be a problem with your hormones because it's suppressing, I don't know, the part of your brain that releases this hormone, or it's pressing on the cranial nerve, so you can't actually like move this extremity anymore, or your hearing is impaired. You know, I always think that with brain and spinal cord cancers and tumors, it's just so hard to navigate, right? Because so many things are involved with it. Like, it entails the whole body, right? Yeah. And I guess it's so, I can't imagine how difficult it is for you as the NP, as the healthcare provider, these patients of, right, like seeing some patients just, for a better word, like just waste away, right? Like not being able to do what they can do before. And you're right, patients, I feel like patients know when the time is coming, right? How do you deal with that as the healthcare provider? Like, how do you deal with this emotional and mental toll of these heartbreaking stories?
Oh, I did not do well the first year, let me tell you. You know, I've just, you know, primary care, urgent care, like, you know, you just see different things. They're not, not so, like, devastating. And being, you know, I think I learned that I think I'm an empath, like, so I absorb emotions. I tend to just kind of like, I wear my heart on my sleeve, you know? A lot of my patients who have these diagnoses, they're like the nicest people. You know, I don't know what it is. And I just feel, not that like if you're not a nice person, you know, it's any sadder, you know, it's not sad, but I just become kind of like intertwined in their lives because I end up seeing them quite a bit. Mm. And, you know, we kind of share our lives together. And so it's like kind of like a surrogate family. Mm-hmm. And so it's the first year I didn't know how to separate myself from my patients in a sense that like, you know, when I saw them, you know, kind of taking a turn for the worse, mm-hmm. like it was hard for me to step back mm-hmm. and kind of protect mm-hmm. myself. Mm-hmm. If you understand what I'm saying, yeah. It's like, you know, because I don't have closure when they pass. Because, you know, sometimes we'll just get a call over the weekend that like so-and-so, mm-hmm. you know, ended up passing. Because sometimes at the end, you know, there's complications, like it could be a heart attack or a pulmonary mm-hmm. embolism mm-hmm. or something, not even the tumor itself, you know, that ends up causing the issue. So it's like, you're just kind of like, you know, you just kind of have to move on, right? And so I would just kind of push that down and go see the next patient. But, you know, that person's smile, you know, their eyes, like it's still like in my thoughts. And so like that first year on the weekends, I would just start like bawling in my car, like I'm going somewhere. And I'll just be like, oh my God, like what do I do with these emotions? Because yeah. I felt it, you know, and I just felt like I felt for them and for their family. Like, how did they process it? Because it's just so unfair and it's just so fast, and I wish we could find a cure for all of this. But
yeah,
my husband, you know, he knows me really well. He told me, like, you know, I didn't want to like keep myself distant mm-hmm. because then I didn't want to come off cold, you yeah. know, like yeah. like, but yet he's like, you have to find that balance. And he's like, you know, he did tell me, like, you just have to process it, don't suppress it mm-hmm. so much. And so I started just letting my feelings happen, you know, like that day when I'm going home, mm-hmm. like I'll kind of like think about their lives and just, you know, it gives me peace that like, instead of thinking that it's a life loss, which it definitely is, and there's a big hole in that family's life now, mm-hmm. because it's a hole in my heart, you know, since I've known that person. But when I think that impact that they made on me and this world, that meant something, you mm-hmm. know, and I'm able to kind of bless them and just kind of like, you know, hope that they're in a place that's better. It also helps that, you know, a lot of my coworkers, the nurses who I work with, once in a while we'll have like these venting sessions mm. and just kind of like cry together yeah. because everyone that I work with, they have big hearts. And it's not like we're just like, okay, next person, you know, we all kind of become like family in a sense, yeah. right? So yeah. it is difficult. And I don't think I've mastered it because once in a while it'll like creep up on me because I think like the first year or two, like there was patients that like just, you know, as me as a brand new neuro-oncology NP, like I met them, like they were like my first patients. Yeah. And when they passed, that was really hard. And I still think about them, you know, and I just feel like, oh, like how do I deal with these feelings? But I think it makes me, you know, do my job a little bit better, you know, like going forward. But like, I feel like even including my education, my mm-hmm. experience and my emotions, I kind of like just push it forward to the mm-hmm. next person. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard.
But I can feel your heart like for these patients. Yeah. And again, I guess it's so hard, like such a field where, I mean, do we really know what goes on in neuro, right? Like, again, like there's something, always something new going on, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like aside from just the cancer aspect, which I know comprises a lot of your work in your very, very specialized field, right? I think neuro in itself, even outside of the oncology aspect, again, it's such, that's why I don't like it, right? Well, I like it, but, I just can't do it. I can't do it because there's okay, so much.
I think.
I mean, yeah. I feel like a part of also that complex topic within neuro in itself, which I know that you love educating about, is Alzheimer's disease or dementia, which again, I guess me and I remember in nursing school, I was like, so what's the difference between these two, you know? I think the first time I ever heard of, I guess, the concept of dementia was, have you ever watched the movie The Notebook?
Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah, I know. Like in the end, I think when he was like sundowning, mm-hmm. I was like, wait, what's going on? And this is the mm-hmm. first time I ever Googled, oh, dementia. And then part of the search list is also Alzheimer's disease. So can you please educate us on what is Alzheimer's disease and how is it connected to dementia?
So Alzheimer's disease, I started kind of like delving into like learning more about Alzheimer's disease and dementia because, you know, my mom was diagnosed quite early. She developed early onset Alzheimer's. I think she was like 55, I would have to say. So I was just kind of in shock, you know. But I remember my paternal grandmother also has Alzheimer's. So I was like, you know what? I need to know a little bit more about this because, you know, you learn it a little about in school and you're just kind of like, okay, right. But Alzheimer's disease is a part, you know, it's dementia also, but it's basically where it's just a description of there's like a buildup of like amyloid plaques or like the tau tangles that they call, you know, crazy neuro terms, right? But they build up in your brain and that's how you develop this dementia. There's another Lewy body dementia where the Lewy bodies, you know, build up. There's vascular dementia where it's like the breakdown of the vascular system and, there, you know, you develop dementia that way. And there's frontotemporal dementia also. Basically, it's that area of the brain that you develop. So you just have different symptoms, you know. So dementia is just kind of like a group of, you know, where you have memory loss, your personality changes. You just lose those memories, you know, that are certain parts of your brain. Yeah, but I'm no expert in it. I just, you know, every day I just try to learn a little bit more about it. Yeah, but, you know, I'm all about, you know, I've been excited about it lately because, you know, like, I think what we hear is that, oh, you know, once you have it, you know, that's it, right? You can't, you know, or if you're destined to have it, you can't really prevent it. Like, I remember when I was initially looking into it a couple of years ago, they were not really talking about any modifiable like risk factors. Basically like, oh, you know, you're screwed. If it happens, if it just like hits you like a brick, like there you go, right? And, you know, great that there's no actual medication that's actually going to help you, right? They think like some medications may slow it down, but there's still actually no efficacy. Like there's no proof that any of this actually works. But I've been excited because there's a lot of research that's happening now that shows that there's actually, you can somewhat prevent it. You know, obviously, if it's going to happen, it may actually still happen. But you can kind of like modify it and kind of like prolong it so that it doesn't happen, you know, sooner.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I guess you could speak more about this because I know that I'm telling your story, right? But you can imagine how heartbreaking it is, right? I mean, I know memory loss is not the only effect of it, right? There's so much more like cognitive aspects of it as well, right? And I agree that I guess this is where science is so helpful, right? It's always something new that we can learn about it every day. I think it was only recently too where people were like, oh, maybe like B12 has something to do with it as well, right? These things that you just learn something new every day. And I guess we learn more about the disease process itself, right? And I guess I remember when I was first watching the movie, I was like, oh, so is it only a memory loss? And then I guess throughout the years, we learned that, oh, wait, there's so much more to it than just like losing memory, right? Or like the cognitive changes and stuff like that. I think it also goes to a whole message of just brain health as a whole, right? Like, I guess how we can optimize like our brain health now, right? Like, even if we may not have any very definite studies on, oh, these are the specific ways that we can, you know, avoid or prevent Alzheimer's disease or dementia, I guess just the whole aspect of just brain health in itself, it's so important to know and learn about, right? And I know you're a huge advocate for brain health and also mental health as well. And as we're talking about memory loss, I wanted to know, what does brain health mean to you? Is it just about memories? Is it just about focus? For you, how would you define brain health?
For me, I think initially it started with memory loss because, you know, I was kind of like thinking, oh my gosh, like, what if I develop Alzheimer's? To me, I told my husband, like, if I develop Alzheimer's, I said, just kill me, you know, because I don't want you dealing with it. I don't want my kids, you know. He was like, that's kind of severe. But to me, it was initially a memory loss. And then I just realized it's so much more than that, you know. And as I kind of like started delving more into how to prevent it, Yeah, I realize it's just about like just overall brain health, you know, which encompasses like the mental health aspect of it, just like, you know, like the social interaction factor, hearing, nutrition, and like exercising, and just like maintaining healthy blood pressure and, you know, your blood sugar levels and sleep, you know, all of that together. Because basically, to me, I realized that when I didn't do certain things that was brain healthy, like I just didn't feel good, like overall, like I didn't feel good, like physically, spiritually, like, you know, emotional. I just felt like really like, you know, poopy, right? Because I wasn't taking care of my brain, then my body wasn't being taken care of. And so I just realized, like, you know, yes, like people could argue like cardiovascular health is like, oh, that's an important thing. Like eye health, like teeth health, all of that, you know, like skincare. Like I love, you know, skincare, you know, me too. You know, you're glowing right now. God. I'm so jealous.
Hi, Jamie. Thank you.
Jamie, I need to go see you. But like I realized brain health is such a pivotal, like just overall, like living, right? I just realized, like, you know, why not just focus on brain health so that overall, like, it'll improve everything. I realized for me, yes, eating healthy for sure, it's a big thing, but for my body type, I have to exercise or I don't feel good. But when I learned that when you exercise, the brain derived neurotrophic factor, it increases. And that goes into the hippocampus, and that's where your memories are stored, right? And so I was like, oh, it's, you know, and then, you know, you just feel better and your muscles get stronger. And so then your bones don't like fold over when you get older. So I was like, okay, that's awesome. And then when you eat better, it just feeds your whole system. And so, like, to me, I always ate fairly healthy, I would say. But, you know, like, I get lazy and I'll just eat like junk. But then I'll just feel like junk, you know? You're so young. You have, you know, you have, I ate so bad when I was your age. But now, like, you know, 40 something, and when I don't eat good, I feel it right away. But, you know, when I learned that, like, what I eat actually affects my serotonin levels, which, you know, affect how I feel, like, mentally and physically, you know, I started kind of looking into, you know, better foods. And then when you sleep, you know, who knew that when you actually slept a good 7 to 8 hours, you know, your brain is actually detoxifying. And so sleep is so important, because, you know, I used to be a night owl, and I would, like, you know, pride myself in getting like 4 hours of sleep, you know, like Christians, no, but like I used to be that way. But I realized, like, older now, and so it's harder. But I'm happy, like, because, you know, when you sleep more, you know, your skin looks better. You know, you just, you're more, like, alert. But besides the fact that it detoxifies, you know, I always tell my son, like, when he studies at night, he needs to get, like, the good, like, you know, 6-7 hours of sleep. Because actually, when you sleep, your brain actually goes over all the material again and kind of organizes it and puts it away. And that's how it retains the memory. And so, you know, if you just like cram and you sleep, you know, it's kind of, it's helpful.
I think the whole aspect of like brain health, everything you mentioned, its effects, it's not only like for us, right? It's also for the people around us as well, right? It influences how we interact with other people, how we respond to other people. And personally, like me too, I guess it's changed over the years. But when I was in high school, like I can survive. Actually, even in nursing school, I could survive on 2 hours of sleep within like a 3-day period. Not good at all. And I'm not, this is not medical advice. I'm not recommending it to anyone.
No.
But definitely, my brain was like, your brain just stops automatically, right?
Like
you will fall asleep because your body, I feel like your, especially your brain, has this like automatic, like, sensor. It's like, okay, we're gonna shut down right now, right? And I guess especially in the long run, like, it's so unhealthy to for those lack of sleep, or even just constant exposure to like constant stress, right? Like stressors. And how have you seen like just like stress as a whole to affect brain health in general?
So like for my patients, going back to neuro-oncology, I have patients who obviously don't deal with their diagnosis very well. They tend to be on the younger ones, which is extremely unfortunate, because then they have a lot of just anxiety and worries, like financially, like if they have young children, they're worried about their children and their spouse. So needless to say, they have a lot of stress. And they come into their appointments and go like tense and like, you know, like, and I just try to, it's just so hard because you're not in their position. You can't just be like, don't worry, you'll be, you know, you can't say like, you'll be fine. Like you can't do that. You can't minimize how they're feeling because, you know, we have no idea how that feels, right? I hope we don't ever. But without like diminishing how they feel, I do kind of let them know that, like, after getting to know them, of course, that like being actually more stress is more harmful to them. You know, like us as doctors, nurse practitioners, we can help our patients heal, like by giving them treatments, medication and whatnot. But you know, it's actually our own bodies and the own person that is facilitating that healing. I really believe, right? You have to create that environment for yourself. And so I encourage them, I remind them that like, okay, they could spend the next 2 weeks worrying about their next MRI and just waste that whole 2 weeks away by worrying and it's gone. Or they could worry, but don't just like, you know, delve in it and just sit there and wallow for, you know, two and actually do something and enjoy that time and try to like work through their stress by going out and doing something if they're able to. And when I put it in that way, they're just like, oh, that's right. Like, why would I waste that the precious time that I have, you know? And actually, my patients who are more like lighter and just kind of like, you know, living day to day to the fullest, I would say like they do tend to have less side effects. I kind of want to say, you know, maybe not towards the end, but in the beginning, I do see them kind of like manage it better and just overall, like it improves their own, you know, mental health, obviously.
In this world of social media that places so much physical critique and pressure on maintaining a youthful appearance against all environmental odds, the skincare and beauty industries have succumbed to a myriad of anti-aging practices. However, the covert fact is that beauty is timeless and that aging is a privilege. Regions, an inclusive wellness brand, seeks to promote this ritual of well-aging, understanding that it is connectivity with the body and attentive care given to it as it changes, including our skin. Founded by Filipino-American Gilio Rizzio, Regents introduces the all-encompassing serum, created to target the concerns of maturing melanated skin by utilizing a blend of healing botanicals used by our ancestors and select clinically proven active ingredients. From the brightening Ayurvedic licorice root to the soothing Centella asiatica and hydrating green algae, welcome to the journey of fueling skin health and enhancing, not changing, your natural shade. With the code FRANZ, that's FRANZ, you can get 15% off your first order on regentswellness.com. Experience the power of mixing native wisdom with modern day science. Do you have any guilty pleasures? I have one. Boba. Given that the average cafe-made milk tea has over 100 calories per serving, over 20 grams of high glycemic sugar, and is packed with artificial flavors, I am so glad that the guilty days are over with Twirl, the world's first canned plant-based milk tea. With only 45 to 50 calories per serving and containing 6 to 7 grams of low glycemic sweeteners, Twirl is made with pea milk, the most sustainable plant-based milk on the market, regenerating the soil where it comes from. Fair trade and organic are the names of the game, as the teas are sourced from biodiverse family farms in China, Japan, and Taiwan that practice sustainable farming techniques. No artificial flavors are ever used. From four different flavors to ready-to-eat plant-based konjac and boba pearls, let's enjoy tasty, creamy, shelf-stable, and healthy milk tea together for 10% off using the code FRANZ10, that's FRANZ10, on twirlmilktea.com. Twirl around in its goodness. Growing up, I was ashamed of my Asian heritage. Classmates would comment about the lunch my grandma cooked. Other kids would make fun of my eyes, and even some adults today would tell me to go back to where I came from. But where do I really belong? Who really am I? Am I not American enough? Highlighting the year of the first documented arrival of Asian Americans in North America, 1587 Sneakers seeks to shine the spotlight on Asian American stories and demonstrate to the world the extraordinary breadth of our passions and achievements. Made with full-grain natural Italian leather by footwear artisans, 100% biodegradable natural rubber outsole, calf leather interior lining for comfort and good smells, and wax cotton laces for longer-lasting cleanliness, these premium sneakers combine the highest quality, an array of timeless designs, and the movement to be authentically who you are. With the code FRANZ15, that's lowercase FRANZ15, you can get 15% off your first order on 1587sneakers.com. Step into embracing your identity without hiding. Express yourself unapologetically.
One of the last questions I wanted to ask was something so intriguing that you shared, I think a few weeks ago, which was a Harvard study on quote-unquote social fitness. Mm-hmm. And actually, since you shared that, I guess that's how the internet works. Like, my algorithm is just like all things about social fitness.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, what was the finding in the study that you shared on the social fitness? And how do you think the pandemic has affected all of our social interaction, right? And how do you think it affects our brain health in general?
You know, when I read that article too, I was kind of shocked mm-hmm. because I thought they were going to say something else. But I guess it makes sense because, you know, we're not alone in this world, you know? I was kind of glad that it did prove the point that we do need each other, mm-hmm. you know, whether physically or just like, you know, we're next to each other or, you know, communicating via social media or whatnot. We're just exchanging that, like, I don't know what it is. It's just when you see someone's face and you smile, then like, then all your endorphin, you know, your brain happy chemicals kind of go up. And I feel like, I think they didn't really talk about that, but I feel like that's a big part of it, you know? Definitely during the pandemic, you know, you saw a lot more cases of depression, suicide, and just people just like kind of, you know, retreating. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that kind of like, it was sad because during the pandemic, I think, before then, my mom was like able to recognize me and she was able to like walk and do things and sing and interact. But like 2 years into the pandemic, because, you know, before the vaccine, like my dad didn't want anybody to come over. And so they kind of just sequestered themselves inside the house and she became bedbound. You know, she wasn't able to walk and she completely like wasn't able to, like she just went downhill so fast. She only had, you know, like one person to talk to the whole time. And I was just like, oh, wow. Like she went down really quickly. And I was like, you know, social interaction, social fitness is really important. Just, you know, not just in Alzheimer's or like neuro-oncology, but just, I think, just in general, you know?
Yeah, I think it kind of like persists the idea of no man is an island, right? Mm-hmm, like need that social interaction. You know, I think last year we had a recording with one of our season two guests. She was a pediatric speech language pathologist, Joanne, and I asked her about the effects of the pandemic on children's ability to or their progress into comprehension, into speaking. She was like, the pandemic definitely took a toll on that, right? And it just goes to show that even from an early age, needing that social fitness, that social interaction, it just goes to show that we are wired for human connections, right? We are wired for connections towards each other, right? And that's why I feel like it's so important that, you know, we get to speak to others. Even I think that's a beauty of social media as well, right? I think during the whole lockdown and everyone was at home, right? People were at least form connections like online. I think that's what happened to all of us, right? Like who could imagine that strangers online become friends because of social media, right? So it's such a beautiful thing. And that's why I feel like it's just helpful for us to have people around us, right? And I think it's also helpful for us to also have time for ourselves, right? To be able to do the things that make us happy as well. Well, that's what I wanted to ask you is, I can't imagine how stressful, even though you explained how stressful and how heartbreaking it can be working in neuro-oncology and, you know, seeing patients with their terminal conditions. And how do you decompress out of all of this? How do you find peace? What activities do you like to do to somewhat separate yourself from, you know, the heartbreaking world of neuro-oncology?
I think Instagram. You know what? Honestly, I think I started like my account like kind of towards the beginning of the pandemic, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. I actually met a lot of my close friends through Instagram. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm kind of half joking, but I think for me, like, if you look at me, I'm not like an outdoors mm-hmm. kind of girl, you know, but I love like going on like a, I would say like a moderate intense hike, like up in our neighborhood, like with my husband, yeah. We'll walk for maybe like 5 miles. We don't have a lot of those moments because, you know, I have three kids, mm-hmm. high school, junior high and elementary school, and they have full schedules. I'm a full-time working mom. So our time is kind of limited with each other, but we try to make like maybe twice a week or three times a week where we just kind of just drop everything and we'll just like walk. Before dinner, after dinner, mm-hmm. whatever works. So that's one of my favorite activities to do. During the pandemic, I really just kind of, I love doing yoga. Because mm-hmm. just physically, it's yeah. almost like it's very meditative. But mm-hmm. also, it's like an actual physical workout. Yeah. I don't do that as much anymore because mm-hmm. I just don't have the time for it. But, you know, I love doing yoga and just walking. I think hanging out with my friends, you know, yeah. like we talked about, like the social fitness. Yeah. I try to make an effort to maybe like go out to dinner or like hang out, like mm-hmm. do a phone call, maybe like at least once a week mm-hmm. or maybe once every other week mm-hmm. with like a friend. And I try to like not go out with the same friend. Mm-hmm. I try to like, you know, mm-hmm. make new connections and mm-hmm. just, you know, it's easy to kind of like get in the rut and just mm-hmm. kind of go out the same people over and mm-hmm. over again. But like, you know, when I watch your stories, I'm just like amazed at you know how many social events like that you're able to go to. I'm actually very impressed at the energy level that you have. I love it though because I see how you just connect so well with everybody because you're just so genuine and you're just so like wanting to know people and their stories, and it's just I love it. And I'm actually learning from you. I learned to just kind of like go out there more, you know, don't be so like stuck in my ways and just meet, you know, just like the people that I know, but like trying to, you know, even like through Instagram too, like yeah. I've met so many cool people. Yeah. And I went to like a conference last mm-hmm. year. We were basically yeah, strangers. Yeah. We stayed yeah. in the same room. Yeah. We're just like best friends now, you know, it's just like, yeah. I would have never done that. And yeah. I would have never had that friendship, but I think you just have to just like get yourself out there. And that's a part of brain health too, is like learning new things, doing new things, like not doing the same things. Cause as you create those new synapses, then your brain learns mm-hmm. those new grooves. And then that's mm-hmm. how you grow. Because another aspect of like Alzheimer's and dementia is your brain starts to kind of shrink, you know? Mm-hmm. And then when you get less mass, you have less neurons mm-hmm. and you have like less of that firing. And everything kind of just gets smaller and smaller, you know? But when you learn new things, like your brain's growing, yeah. you know? So that's just another also, reason Jane, to.
And how things. Can you forget our favorite K-dramas?
Oh, we yes!
We watch K-dramas.
That's right! I almost forgot.
For those who may not know, people wouldn't know, but me, June, and Jamie, we have a group chat where we literally wait on each other to finish episode. We don't have a book club, we have a K-drama club where we wait it's for each best. Other to watch the next episode of Singles Inferno, first of all.
Oh my gosh, that was so fun.
It was so fun. So I think things like that, right? Like just things that you can look forward to, mm-hmm. I think brings like so much joy. And just like you said, being able to spend time with a lot of people, like I see many amazing people here watching, like Alex and Christina, who said, "A child in high school, I thought you were 30 at most." Yeah.
What does that mean?
She said that you look young. And she does.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. You know, I have a filter on. Because this closet, you know, I told Christian the only quiet place that my kids and my husband won't bother me is my closet. And so I'm literally sitting in my closet right now. So the lighting is bad. Mm-hmm. So I had to use a little filter. But yeah.
No, we love it. You are glowing. Yeah. I mean, I feel like the amount of times options that we had to canvas for this live to happen. And I was like, yeah, it will have to be 11 p.m. Eastern time because that is the time when June is going to have free time. Because June is it's just a superhero. No. Just
oh my god.
She's like super mom, and it's just such an honor to speak with you tonight and just learn so much about such a very specialized field that it's honestly so scary, right? For me, neuro-oncology scares me. I mean, like you said, it's like a death sentence, right? Definitely medicine and science now has changed that aspect, right? Now people can actually like have hope, right? That, oh, we can at least improve our quality of life, extend a lifeline, maybe not as long as we want, but the ability to just provide quality of life, right, to these patients and their family members is such a beautiful thing. And it's just so beautiful that you are a part of that workforce and that story that I can't imagine how much it touches so many people's lives. And such an honor and so fun to talk to you tonight.
It was so fun. I'm so bummed that we never got to hang out when you were in LA.
I will be back.
I'm so sad because I think we planned it for like 5 months, and then we both, like, none of us could meet. I felt, I really genuinely felt like horrible because I don't like flaking on people. It just, there was literally no way I could have done it. But man, really have to.
That only means that when we finally all meet, the three of us, and also I think the NP mom is here watching, maybe the four of us, right?
Yes,
we have so much more stories to talk about. And I am so excited. And I'm just so honored that you joined me tonight and just shared me your expertise and all of your stories. And beyond all of that, just sharing your heart. Because like all the way from here, I could feel like your love and like your genuine care for your patients. And it's such an honor to have someone like you on my platform.
Oh, thank you so much, Christian. I was honestly kind of nervous because you have some pretty heavy people on your podcast.
Excuse me, this is NP June Brain Health. What are you talking about?
So I was like, let me see. And honestly, I felt like I kind of just, you know, honestly, the topics that I picked, they're pretty heavy. So I feel like I kind of glazed over a lot of it, and there's so much more to delve into. But you know, that's why you follow me, and you learn a little bit every day.
Please follow June. She posts this super amazing reels of just, you know, constant reminders of regarding brain health and just stay, you know, just being present. And you know, it's so easy to forget to take care of ourselves and our brains, especially during such busy lives and busy days. I mean, I can't imagine you, you know, being a mom too and like working as an NP, and just, you know, just those reels are so helpful just to be reminded that take a pause and, you know, just breathe. And
that makes me so happy to hear that, honestly, because sometimes I do it, like I have this great idea and then I do it and I'm like, oh my gosh, why did I do that? Like, it probably didn't help anyone. I look super silly. But, you know, I'm like, you know what? It's okay. I did it for myself. So when I'm like 70 years old, I look back and be like, oh, yes, you know.
There we go.
That was for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Christina just commented saying, my two brain cells, thank you too. Well, I am glad at least two of them were energized tonight. Thank you, and June. Thank you for spending an hour and a minute with me in your closet.
You're welcome. I had such a good time.
I feel so honored. You spent 1 hour in the closet for me. Thank you so much, June.
Thank you.
This is not the last time that we will have a live stream. There's so much more to talk about. Like we said, neuro is an ever-evolving field, and so much research is coming out, and so much findings that we have to spread to the general public. So this is
next time they find a cure for Alzheimer's or glioblastoma, we're doing it.
There we go. June, have a great night. Have a great night, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.